Prepaid services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 187. I'm Adam and Chatwood wins there. Five rounds rapid. Oh, sorry. I was just so pleased with myself. I managed to steal that one off everybody else. Here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Nonsense.
Oh. Reese Parton's back.
Close your eyes, my darling, or three of them at least.
Matthew Kressel's back.
They're Daemons from the planet Deimos.
It's Robert Haynes.
I see. So all we've got to deal with is something which is either too small to see or 30 feet tall, can incinerate you or freeze you to death, turn stone miniatures into homicidal monsters, and look like the devil.
I didn't expect you to read the whole script of the blooming show, you know. Anyway, Mary Lang.
He is the great wizard, Qui Quay Quad.
Qui Quay Quad. Yeah.
Pedant. Hello and welcome to the show. This week we'll be looking at the Daemons, or as they said most of the time in the episode, the Demons. And
at least no one tried to say Mary had a little lamb backwards.
I was almost going to do that, Kirby. Almost.
Okay. Remember the rule about eating, muting microphones. That includes rattling sweet papers. Thank you very much. Right. Five episodes to try and get through. Oh, my goodness. Dear. Right. So episode one begins, and this is all... Did everybody watch the colour version?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Guy Leopold. Who is that a pseudonym for?
Barry Letts and
Robert Sloman.
There's an echo. So basically it's very bad weather, in this village. We see a pussycat looking a bit scared and a dog.
Yeah. I thought I was watching Hyde when I first saw that.
The dog runs off and the bloke walking the dog gets killed by some mysterious thing.
By something that was never, ever explained.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Then we meet Miss Hawthorne, who's having a word with the doctor, but not our doctor, just the local doctor, who is bleating on about sort of certain witchcrafty type stuff. Yeah. And then we go to the BBC Three outside broadcast at the dig, which is a bit like Time Team, but no
Devil Samp.
But no Tony Robinson. Yes, go on.
Oh,
I said Devil Samp.
Same to you. Meanwhile, we have another scenario where the Doctor is fiddling with Bessie. That's what she said. And of course, something exciting is coming on the television, which is of course the archaeological thing. Everybody else is talking about it. Doctor doesn't seem particularly interested until a certain word is mentioned. Now this happens quite a lot, where the Doctor's doing something, somebody mentions something, and he decides to go along because it is actually quite interesting after all.
I know.
You can tell how old this story is by the fact that everybody's rushing to their TV to watch this instead of recording it.
Yes.
Well, there's three stations. Well, plus ITV.
Yes, indeed. Yes, there's four stations. Or maybe they just didn't want to mention Channel 4 or 5. Because we don't know what year this is set in, really.
Well, about the unit dating, it could be the early 80s.
It could be.
Not to be stupid. Mm.
Yeah, the TV presenter is a bit on the smarmy side, but I think it's also quite similar to the... muting microphones. If I don't hear a muted microphone and rattling the sweet papers next time, there will be points deducted.
I'm sorry, just tidying up things on my bed because I haven't had time.
How can you not hear a microphone?
What?
How can you tell who's muted?
Never mind.
I'm last.
So am I. Well, anyway, yes, baby. It's a bit like the presenter from the Ambassadors of Death, a similar sort of style in which...
Oh, yeah.
But slightly more smarmy, but...
Perhaps that was normal style.
No,
at the time.
I've never seen... Obviously, I used to watch TV in the early 70s. Don't ever remember a BBC presenter being like that. I don't know, that's just me being a bit...
David Frost?
Pointless. Nah, he was never like that.
Early in his career.
Was he? Okay, maybe it was.
Well, you know, he did. That did remind me of his style.
Really? Okay.
Sort of early in his career, before he hit kind of doing mainstream serious interviews, you know, starting with the Frost-Nixon interviews.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because he hosted the Frost Report, which is one of the first big satirical programs on
Well, he kind of reminded me of the news presenters that Michael Palin is always making fun of.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll accept that might be the case, but it doesn't matter, really. He was just playing a part, wasn't he? Yeah, so the Miss Hawthorne wants to stop them proceeding with this dig because she can sense something evil is about to, you know...
Evil!
They're all watching telly in the pub, which is quite interesting because I didn't think really that telly watching in pubs was that much of a thing in the early 1970s. Certainly is now, and certainly... You know,
Adam, I think you were a bit too young to go into a pub back then, don't you think?
I'm pretty sure I was taken into pubs when I was a young child. Young children were allowed in pubs when they were accompanied by their parents, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah, I went in when I was about 10. 10 with my parents, of course. Yeah.
I can't remember. It was a long time ago, but I'm pretty sure I was occasionally taken into a pub. Yeah, so basically, what's her name again? Miss Hawthorne is going around trying to tell... all and sundry about the forthcoming evil.
Evil.
So anyway, they're all. The master turns up, doesn't he? In the guise of of the local vicar.
Yeah, we were watching this the other night, and Louisa, I'm sorry, Fred.
Sorry.
I had not told her this was a master.
Perry?
I had not told her this was a master story, and the master shows up, and she went, whoa! Oh,
no. Yes. But Debbie, she'd watched a lot.
Yes?
I was going to say, if she watched a lot of their doctor stories, she would have known that the master
She's just starting to watch these older stories with me. And by the way, she's preferring the older stories.
Good.
Ooh.
So the doctor and Joe show up in the village and then show up in the pub, in fact, and the doctor almost starts a scrap until Joe sort of, you know, smooths things over a bit and gets the directions to the dig. And of course, it's all building up, as you can sense by it's all building up to the finale when they do not through the wall, and that's going to be the end. You know that's going to happen. Come because he's they're timing it. So you watch the clock. You know, they're timing it. The doctor's not quite there. He's not quite there. Meanwhile, the Yates and Benton are watching rugby instead of the dig, and due to the rugby, they nearly missed the big, you know, big culmination of the episode. So
well, they didn't see much in the end.
I do love the master's sort of. Eco Azal stuff that he does, all the chanting and his sort of big voicing and stuff like that, and his not quite laughing, more of a sort of laugh, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I'd have used that if it was the other laugh.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that basically?
It's interesting.
Sorry.
It's interesting having watched two or three stories now with Anthony Ainley's master and then going back to Roger Delgado, and I was struck by how much more menace that Roger Delgado has in a look than Anthony Ainley can bring up even at his best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I had not seen any Roger Delgados until we started watching these older ones. And
you're right there. Right?
My master was Anthony Ainley. I mean,
same here, really. Yeah.
So my doctor is the fourth doctor. So when I saw the master, it was Anthony Ainley. So, but I really like Roger Delgado as the master much better.
Yeah, he is good. He's just amazing actor. Oh, I do like. I like all the masters. To be honest with you, all of them, even John Sim.
Yeah,
you're right there, Robert. Yeah. shocked by that remark, obviously.
He's been choked by the master.
So anyway,
that was just a hiccup.
Like I said, the part of the rugby, them nearly missing the dig, was on the next episode. I was just jumping ahead of myself there. I wonder if you could edit together all the clips of Delgado's master doing the chanting and the preaching to Azar, but how long that would take out of the whole story. Because there seems to be an awful lot of it. But it is quite enjoyable. Meanwhile, the Doctor has been frozen solid, fortunately with his leg up. so that's quite convenient, considering his bad back. But
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Typical Pertwee pose.
Yeah, I was going to say the iconic Pertwee pose.
I'm thinking that later on, it didn't, when he was in bed with the, you know, he had his, like, the sheet over him, it didn't look like his leg was up in that particular clip. But maybe that's just a camera angle thing.
And also his hands were kind of up there in grasping position. Yeah. And when he's in bed, I'm wondering if he
melted a little bit by then.
Yeah, I guess
so. Frosted under the studio lights. Yeah.
And that poor archaeologist.
Maybe they
we never hear about him again.
Yeah. They say he's dead.
Okay.
They do.
Oh, of course they do. Yeah, that's right. So there was a little bit of a budget for this episode that stretched to a helicopter. Mike.
With unit on it.
Yeah, so I was quite interested in this one, because although he's quite laddish, he does come across... I know Richard Franklin is gay, but Mike Yates does come across as slightly gay in this episode. You could be a bit suspicious that he himself, rather than Richard Franklin...
Well, what was
Franklin.
His last line?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was his last line? Yeah. Would you like a dad's penis?
Yes. But he's wearing this bright red leather jacket while flying this helicopter, although Benton's the one wearing the bright red jeans to even it out.
I've got to say, I liked him a lot more than I liked Benton. Nothing against the actor, but I just prefer Yates.
Yeah, but that's a great a helicopter scene. I like that.
Yes, £20,000 of unit money.
And also, when the brigadier was in bed, he had the bat phone. I thought I was quite pleased that he happened to just have the bat phone. And the funny gets the funniest was his reaction when he realizes that they borrowed his helicopter. My helicopter! That's the thing that got him going, because they borrowed his helicopter. So Benson goes into the church and finds Miss Hawthorne tied up in a box. I don't know why she wasn't actually killed.
You would think that unit would have procedures set up for dealing with things if the brigadier is not available.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
Clearly they don't. Until Nicholas Courtney isn't available for filming, by which they just assign some sort of colonel or other relevant or available brigadier.
Reprobate.
Yeah, or a general.
It's early days, Kirby.
Yeah. So the doctor eventually sort of recovers. The master is trying to bring Azal back to life, but we don't actually see it. We just see his sort of signs of him being there, but not actually him, apart from the great big hoof prints across the fields, which I thought was quite effective.
Hoof prints that change size. They're gigantic when you're flying over them. And
I know.
I'm not really bothered about that. I just think that the effort they went to do the helicopter flying over the fields and to see the hoof prints on the ground. I was quite impressed by that. I saw a picture in the paper recently of somebody on a beach. They were trying to, put imprints of, I don't know if it was bodies or what, on this sand on a beach. And I thought the amount of time it would have taken for them to go along the whole beach to do all that. Sure, they had too much time in their hands. But, they did a really good job with that.
But I'm kind of amused that they would lose the creature in the forest. I would think that would make it even easier to find him because something 30 feet tall would be crashing through trees. Yeah.
It's not always shrinking. 30 feet.
It's shrinking. That's why the hoof prints are getting smaller and smaller, and why they lose it. It's the line that Robert quotes at the beginning. It's either 30 feet tall or too small to see.
Oh, okay, good one. I'm glad that was covered. Anyway, this is the point that the dome is sort of put over the village, which again that effect was really really well done. I thought
one of the best.
Hungry Earth, anyone?
Yeah, it's better than Hungry Earth, really.
Well, we didn't really get to see much in Hungry Earth, did we? It was
goes back to Midwich Cuckoos and its adaptation, Village of the Damned.
It also reminds me of that new sci-fi series. Is that called Under the Dome? I haven't seen it yet, but it looks really good.
Under the Dome.
Well, of course, things bounce off that one, whereas this is a heat sort of shield.
Blows them up.
Yeah, very, very good.
I like the effects with the stones and all that, you know, when they throw them and they...
It's also the effect when they create the doorway through it. That was very, very well done as well. So, well done, 1971 BBC. Very, very impressive.
Yes.
So the brigadier turns up at the place. Of course, he can't go through because he taps his stick. Is it a stick or what do you call it? Is it a stick?
Swagger stick.
Oh, is it? It's a baton.
A baton, is it? Anyway,
swagger stick.
Never mind what it is. Yeah, anyway, they're very clever in which they do. He taps the thing, and fortunately, he didn't walk straight into it because otherwise that would have been a bit nasty.
Yes.
But they got the van halfway through it. And they've done such a good job. I'm really impressed with the way they tried to create this.
And even the sound effect.
It is a swagger stick instead of a.
Never mind.
And I do like the sound effect that they put on every time people are near that heat barrier. Yeah. That's interesting, really? Too.
The other thing, I like that, but it was rather annoying after a
while.
Yeah,
it was annoying, but it made you aware that it was there.
Yes.
The other thing that I found quite interesting is the radios had a ringtone. I thought, that's quite a little jump forward. Because I'd never noticed that before. I know they're radios, but the fact they use them as radios, but the fact they obviously look like giant mobile phones, and when they go off, they got a ringtone. I thought, wow, that's innovative, and they sort of managed to see forward, or foresee even, what we've got now. Well, certainly, you know, when I first had a mobile phone in 1996 is probably the first time I ever had a mobile phone, and it was... It was quite a chunky thing, and a little aerial that came out. So it did rather resemble what they're using as props in this story. So, you know, it's quite
no chunkies clever. In remembrance of the Daleks. This is the
yes.
Adam, I do remember there was something about the first mobile phone being around in 1971.
Yeah, but it was substantially bigger than what they're using in this story.
For sure.
Yeah, it was being developed. It was still a few years down the road before the first. Yeah. They were able to test the first, and it was
and
still
Motorola
a
were the ones at the front of all that technology. And I had my first ever mobile phone was indeed a Motorola. So there you go. Very boring fact, but that's actually
other mobile phone companies are available.
Yeah, like Apple and. and Nokia and Sony Ericsson. That's the three. That's the brands I've had.
The Dynatac mobile phone was launched on 6 March 1983.
Thank you for that.
I just recently watched a doco on
a doco. Australians.
Documentary.
Australians always put O on the end of things.
Russia,
apart from
it's or Germany.
Actually, no, Scousers put E on these things. They have like hospital as an Aussie. Oh, it's like you lot, in fact. Right. So yeah, the. The Doctor and Joe go down the dig hole thing and get followed by Bok, who is just about to kill them. And that.
The four barrows at Aldborn.
Really?
The town yes. is Aldborn.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kirby. Anyway, so the Doctor manages to repel Bok by saying some... Mumbo jumbo, as the master says. He does like Venusian lullabies, doesn't he? It's got to be said. Unfortunately, Bok, under the studio lights, doesn't look so much like a stone creature like he does on the film.
You can see his suit, can't you? The material.
Yeah, a lot of this is actually shot on film, and I'm thinking, you know, should they really bite the bullet and bring this out as a Blu-ray, but just sort of put up with the sort of poor quality video on it? I'd be rather pleased if they did.
They don't have the original film to go back to unlike Spearhead from Space, where they can upscale it. They don't have it. It's film that's been edited on video, so the definition is automatically taken down to standard definition.
Fair enough. Well, that answers that one, then, doesn't it? Really?
So sticking
unless
your DVD
they did it all on black and white.
Sticking your DVD in a Blu-ray player is the high in the upscale automatic upscaling, and that's the highest quality you're probably going to get at this.
Thank you very much. So, yes.
I am nervous.
No, it's fine. I'm just looking for a bit of padding at the moment. The Doctor shows everybody slides of various versions of the devil.
They've got horns. They've got horns.
Yeah.
Leave that out of this.
What? You're being rude.
Never mind.
Science.
Yeah, milking Quatermass in the pit for all it's worth at this point. Yeah.
The master then gets all the villagers together and tries to preach to them and stuff like that. I think trying to brainwash them, really.
Hey.
Yes?
You know in that pub when Bok comes in, was John Scott Martin one of the...
He was. Well spotted.
Yes.
Oh, I'll have to delete that question from there.
I thought I recognised him.
Good, I like that.
Who's that?
just as well, I wrote a couple of extra questions.
Who is he?
Who's John Scott Martin?
He's just a...
Hold on. Kirby does not know John Scott Martin.
Hang on. It's a moment. Hang on. It's a hallelujah moment. Kirby does not know who John Scott Martin is. Hallelujah. There we go.
He's not even... let me see.
Hell's
tea. He's a behind-the-scenes extra. He does...
He's quiet. He's doing some frantic research on the computer.
Yes, yeah. I am.
I know, Mr. does not know who John Scott Martin is.
Oh, I should have changed the question. Who's John Scott Martin? That should have been the question. And hope it lands on Kirby. That'd be quite funny. So anyway, Joe falls out of Bessie while the Doctor's riding towards the Brigadier to have a chat with him through the heat barrier.
Oh, he was a Dalek operator. Okay.
Yay. And an actor. Never mind, doesn't matter. And then Joe.
Obviously it does.
So Joe's all right. She's just a bit unconscious. They're having a bit. The Joe and the Doctor have a bit of a
nap. He was the Paul Casey.
Never mind.
Yes.
Joe and the Doctor have a nap each in this story.
A nap each.
It's not what it sounded like you said.
Yeah, I was surprised how
I would have said diaper because you lot are here.
I was surprised how quickly Joe recovers from having a sedative injected to being up and out there and
she's partly taken over, and she. I just like the bit that they left in the bit where she jumps out of bed, tries to grab her jacket, misses it, and grabs it again before
realizing
she can't get out. And there's a couple of people cocking up their lines that they left in as well, which. I can't pick up on and tell you which exactly they were, but they are.
And I like when she exits the window, she runs right for the ladder that she knew was there.
Happens to be a ladder there.
Now, I did think about that one. But I was thinking, if I had a ladder that big in my backyard, I'd probably have it propped up against the roof. And then the wife would say, well, burglars can climb up it and get in through the window. We would say, where the hell am I supposed to put the ladder then? No, so I don't know. I just envisage this sort of conversation that. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. So basically the Brigadier and his little sidekick are trying to make a machine that will open up a little door through the heat shield.
Sergeant Osgood.
Is he good?
Oh, I love Sergeant Osgood, yes.
Osgood is good.
He must be very good, yes.
Yeah. I liked him.
What a great costume, though, that the Master has. It is a ceremonial costume.
Oh, that reminded me of the Doctor Who movie.
Yes.
Exactly. Reese.
It's just interesting symbols he's got around his collar bit.
It reminded me a lot of the outfits that Freemasons wear.
All right.
And him also doing "By My Will, So Mote It Be," which is also, as Damaris Heyman points out, the making of documentary also invokes the Masons as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And the first time we see Azal from at least his feet. The first thing I noticed was, your tights are wrinkled.
Yes.
Anyway, so the Doctor draws diagrams on the sort of screen of the motorbike for Osgood is good to try and turn into machine. I don't know.
I think so.
See it, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about Back to Front, actually, because there's a scene which is a very effective special effect when there's like all the vibrations going on, and they shoot against a bit of tin foil, is it? And they sort of rattle it to make it brilliant effect. But they must have flipped the screen back again to make that look normal. That's
what they always did for the Ice Warrior.
Yeah, in the Patrick Troughton era. But this is the first time I remember seeing it during colour TV era of Doctor Who. But it looks really, really good. I like that effect. Of course, so we have the comedy scene of the machine blowing up in Osgood's face, or the blackness has gone under his glasses, unfortunately.
He could have rubbed his eyes, you don't know.
Maybe, no, I didn't think he did, actually. You did actually see the whole of the scene.
Yeah.
So then we get to see some things to embarrass any English person of the Morris dancing and people dancing and looking extremely silly.
The head and tink furry men.
Fred was asking, what is this dance? And why are they doing this? Why is he hitting everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah,
were you already familiar with the Morris dancing when you watched this?
Who, me?
Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, of course.
Kirby knows everything.
Yeah.
Except for who John Scott Martin is.
And an interesting side note, while we're talking about Morris dancers, Paul Cornell did a comic for DC called Knight and Squire, which is effectively London's version of Batman Robin. And there's one of the issues he features Morris dancers and a group called the Cider Men.
Anyway, the rest of the Doctor gets caught
One thing you skipped over where the Joe was down in the cavern, and what's his
in
name?
In the cavern.
And they were hiding. They were hiding in plain sight.
Richard Franklin.
Yes. They were hiding in plain sight. I mean, the people coming down
behind the wheel with the open spokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Here comes
the mail.
I thought you wanted us to talk.
Be quiet.
Yeah.
So I forgot what I was going to say now. God's sake.
Uh-huh. Sorry.
Magic.
No, it wasn't magic's fault. Oh, yeah, the Doctor gets caught by the Morris dancers. And it's quite a clever little scene, the way he gets out of...
Oh, it's magic.
He gets out of getting killed. I thought that worked really, really well. It's quite violent, actually, in some ways, this episode.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And Havoc, although they're in it, they're quite inconspicuous because of the way they're sort of they merge into the normal cast. Because normally Havoc are all unit soldiers, but they're obviously villagers in this particular story.
Well, they're not all getting killed three times in the same story
not noticeably, anyway. The episode 4-5, begins with Azal growing into full size and being very shouty and. Has that actor that played Azal? Has he played any?
Stephen Thorne.
No, what did
he? Who also played Omega and Eldrad, or the Eldrad in part 4 of Endemir.
Okay, we're not so boomy voice in Eldrad as Eldrad. Sorry, but certainly similar to the Omega voice.
Well, I thought he looked like Brian Blessed.
Oh, dear. I don't know if Brian Blessed would be particularly pleased with that.
Yeah,
assessment.
Stephen Thorne also played Max Vilmio in The Ghost of Inspace, which was the BBC Radio 2 story that John Pertwee did. Pertwee. That was the last thing he did, Doctor Who thing he did before he died.
Okay, thank you for that.
And I want to give a lot of credit.
Oh, and he was Aslan in the animated language.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
I want to give credit to Delgado. Because really, it's his face every time Azal shows up that convinces me how awesome Azal is. Yeah. I think Delgado plays it very, very well.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because I didn't think Azal's makeup was very well done.
Well, no, it wasn't. But the power and the frightening, you know, how frightening he was, was pulled off more by Delgado than it was by, Azal himself.
That's that's what she said. Anyway,
for a 1971 BBC production and for production qualities, it's actually quite good. It doesn't stand up today, but it looks very good for the time.
For the time, Deb was in the room while I was watching a little bit of it this morning. I remarked to her that I just loved everybody dressed in the natural 1970s clothes, and it just sort of just looks lovely.
Yes.
And also that, you know, that this, bearing in mind this is shot, 41 years ago, you're looking at the shots of the fields and stuff like that, and it's lovely to see the scenery, the countryside and everybody in their 1970s stuff. So that's just what I felt when I was watching it. Totally irrelevant to the story, but it's just the enjoyment I got from watching it. I'm just so pleased that they got it back to colour, because when I first watched this story, it was in black and white, and there was nothing colour to watch, because I've watched it on a very, very ropey old VHS as well. So, but now we've got a beautifully recreated color version.
Yeah, I had never seen this before. I'd watched the first episode twice, and
until you fell asleep.
Yeah, basically.
And of course, then iconic scene, 11 minutes and 27 seconds when. The Brigadier comes up with his favorite line of.
Did you know something stupid about that soldier? When he's approaching the Brigadier, he's got the gun aimed at his head.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say a couple of minutes ago, they're pointing those guns at Ooh, what was that?
Don't know. What is
they're,
it?
The soldiers are always pointing the guns at random people, just willy-nilly, who aren't...
I know. No respect.
It's very, very poor gun etiquette.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. And the line almost got cut because they were going through it because I think the final episode was overrunning and they were just cutting stuff. And Nick Courtney went over and said, well, I like that line. I'm like, okay, we'll put it back in. And, of course, it became the famous line.
Oh, man.
So much so that Courtney actually titled his first autobiography that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can somebody stop messing around with their microphone, or I'm going to get very annoyed.
Yeah, not who is doing that?
Somebody was messing with... Who was that?
Still happening.
Well, it can't be me. I don't have a separate microphone.
No, can't be me because I'm going to be able to hear myself.
It's not me.
Isn't it?
It's not me.
Reese.
It stopped whatever it's doing.
I'm far away from me. I'm nowhere near it. Kirby.
Okay.
Yours is on your head.
It's stopped now.
Yes, I think somebody's being very noisy.
Mine's not on my head.
Never mind.
Mine's up my computer.
Joe saves the day by nearly sacrificing herself, to cut a long story short. But she's a very good scene.
Isn't that stupid, though?
And very Moffat-y, because that's the sort of thing Moffat likes to put in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But it's like a computer having a mental breakdown, you know what I mean? Mm. I cannot compute. That's what it reminded me of.
As someone pointed out in the making of documentary on the second disc, Azal and the demons must have seen self-sacrifice before. Why were they so surprised?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another thing I really enjoyed is when Benson blew up Bok. And who's that?
It's Matthew's thing's going off. And look.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Are you breathing?
Yeah. You breathe. Stop breathing.
Stop breathing. Hold your breath for the rest of the podcast.
He did that before.
No, going back to anyway, the when he blows up Bok and it goes back together again, which reminded me a little bit when Captain Jack was blown up and went back together again in Torchwood, but not quite as graphically the way he did that. It was disgusting, but it was very well done. Anyway, so the air basically culminates in they're all running out of the church before it blows up, and Benton acting very tough in relation to catching the Brigadier or arresting him. And then...
Brigadier?
Sorry, catching the Master. While the Brigadier has a chat with the Doctor, and the Doctor then is very sort of patronising towards Joe to tell her to go and change into something a bit different, etc.
Yeah,
stop doing that, Matthew.
I didn't like the Doctor in this episode.
Yeah, he was mean and insulting towards her this whole episode.
Yes.
Well, this whole story, I should say.
Apparently, at one point, they were filming and he got, Pertwee got pissed off at something and he just took the motorcycle and disappeared for a few hours.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that.
There you go. And and then it has a very camp ending, like we say, with Yates wanting to have a dance with the Brigadier, and them all dancing very, very camply around the maypole. A very high shot, though, it's beautifully done. You know, the high shot over the
that's from the destroyed church tower as well.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, because they couldn't figure out a way of doing the shot where they couldn't get the church without having the just destroyed church in shot.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, we'll just film from the top of the church, and that solves our problem.
Okay, yeah. I suppose I'd better go first.
Figured out what my microphone issue is.
What is it then?
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I'm recording at my mom's because I have ongoing internet issue. The cat is playing with the microphone cord.
traditional 29-year-old cat blaming excuse. Well done. Mm-hmm. Right then, I'll go first. The Demons is not one of the stories I think I must go and watch this, to be honest with you. But watching it, it's quite nostalgic. But for me, it's quite a lot of padding. I don't think it needed to be 5 episodes. I think they could have made it 4 after all. But you know, on the whole, it's an all-time classic, isn't it? I think this is John Pertwee's favourite story, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
it was.
Yes.
Which makes me sort of feel quite affectionate towards it in that way. It's a bit of good fun.
Out for a little bit.
Yeah. On the whole, I quite enjoyed it. It's obviously I have picked a few little holes in it, like we always do. But the holes aren't enough to destroy the story for me. I think they did. No, that's really shocking, isn't it, Robert? But on the whole, very, very good, Matthew.
When I went through it, Concus Cerberus, back in June, and I was putting together the viewing room list, this was the story I picked for the Third Doctor. And for me, it's quintessential Pertwee. It's, if you like the Pertwee year, it's got everything. Third Doctor, Joe, Unit, Roger Delgado as the Master at his absolute best, the English, you know, the setting in England. If you like the Pertwee era, and if you want to know what the Pertwee era is at its best and what it's about, this is the story to go to, and it's a personal favorite of mine.
Right, you're there, Matthew. Did you want to make any further comments about last week's episode that you couldn't do, even though you did send some email in?
Well, I ended up typing that up. I had it prepared to read out so that nobody could interrupt me. And what happened is that after the internet crashed, to answer Kirby's wanting to know how I could be doing things on Facebook but not on Skype, my dumb phone does not connect to Skype, but I could bring up the mobile Facebook page. So I had to sit there and retype this whole thing on my phone to post on Facebook.
Okay. Thank you anyway, Matthew. Robert? Robert, hello.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Yes, sure. I'm here. Sorry, can you hear me?
I can now, just you didn't seem to answer when I... Never mind, carry on.
Oh, okay. I have to agree with Matthew. It is typical Pertwee, and it's got everything from, Unit, all the Unit players such as Yates, what's his name, Benton, the Brigadier. It's got Joe, it's got the Doctor, it's got the Master, and it's
reading
got an Earth setting.
The Professor and Marianne.
Yeah, all right. It's got Miss Hawthorne.
Yeah, Miss Hawthorne is a great sort of character. I'm glad she's still alive these days as well. And you know, very eccentric and batty sort of woman.
She says she's long in the tooth, which I thought was quite funny.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I know. And that was, what, over 40 years ago. Mm. But very enjoyable. And I've had read somewhere people describing the end shot of the church getting blown up as being not very good, but I thought it was very, very good.
Yeah, very good. Although the explosion did look like it was in front of the church. That's the only thing I picked up on that, but it's fine.
Yeah,
fine.
I quite enjoyed it. But yeah, very good at special effects. Everything ties together well. But as you say, yeah, there is quite a bit of padding and a lot of the Master going, Evo, whatever, and all that kind of.
But to be fair, I did actually really enjoy those bits.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're very effective. And I thought that the cavern was a very good sort of set.
I was just a bit disappointed that the Beatles weren't there.
But the lighting, I thought, very, very good. And often Doctor Who lighting gets, especially in the 80s, gets a knockover. Yeah, very well done. Yep.
Thank you, Robert. Mary?
Well, to go off of what Matthew said, he says, if you like the Pertwee era, I do not like the Pertwee era. I kind of inwardly groan whenever you pick one of those episodes because they are just so...
It. I did pick Spearhead and Space coming up soon, but I didn't
Spearhead,
pick... Yeah, but I didn't
to be
pick
fair, you picked that one. I'm a space lover of that kind of science fiction. And for me, the Pertwee era is just too earthbound, too adventure, with Unit. And Pertwee's too much of a James Bond,
which I don't appreciate. I agree completely with you, Mary.
Is it funny you should say Mary? But when I was going to put as one of the questions, which James Bond film got several mentions in this story? And it was Doctor No. Carry on.
Yes, he did. I picked up on that, too. I mean, there's just too many car chases, helicopters, motorboats, you know, all that kind of stuff that I guess was very popular.
Wait till you see Planet of the Spiders.
Well, I did see I did see Planet of the Spiders, you know, and I didn't like that one any
more. Hovercraft.
But that is set on another planet.
So I am not a Pertwee fan.
If we found a Pertwee story that is set in space or on another planet, would you think you might like enjoy that one?
I might.
I'm not going to pick it out
on
purpose.
His Venusian Aikido or whatever it is he does. I just find it all kind of ridiculous. I did not care for the character of Miss Hawthorne, mostly because I found it.
Matthew.
Sorry.
Cats.
I found it very distracting. I'm thinking she must have gotten a new pair of contact lenses because she was blinking constantly and very rapidly all the time. And it's like she couldn't bring herself to look anybody in the eye. She was always staring at people's chins whenever she would talk to them.
I had a problem with a bride on Saturday that kept blinking, so I'd have kept on taking pictures and, you know, retaking them because she kept blinking just as I was taking the photos. Very annoying.
But it looked like her eyes were constantly irritating her. As much as I would have liked, you know, her performance, that was very distracting. And something else about the Pertwee era, for any of you who watch EastEnders, I don't know if you noticed that there was a mention of the Pertwee era on EastEnders.
Was that?
When the character Tamar comes in with a stack of videos and he says, okay, we're going, you know, this is the introduction to the Pertwee era. And he even puts one of the discs in and it plays the Pertwee, Doctor Who theme tune.
This is interesting, actually, because I don't watch EastEnders, but I do know that there was a character a few years ago, Bradley, and he was a Doctor Who fan. Are you watching those stories at the moment when Bradley's in it, or is this more recent?
No, this is very recent. This is current. Okay. And Tamar, who's like the iconic geek, he would be the one that would be into Doctor Who on this.
But I would have thought that would have been mentioned when Bradley was in it a few years ago, because I think Tamar was in it then. Anyway, this is Doctor Who relevant.
And it was earlier this week, if you want to catch it. Anyway, the other thing I want to say is... I did some reading about this because I really don't like the episode. But whenever I don't like an episode, I try to look at it in the context of the time that it was made. And this was made in the early 70s, which, you know, once I read all this stuff, the thing that I read said that this story, for the people who watched it at the time, lives on in their memories as one of their favorite stories. Thank you, Kirby. And when you look at it, it's got everything that people were hung up on in the early 70s. As Joe says, this is the age of Aquarius, and people were very caught up in mysticism, studying the occult and the white and the black witches and all that kind of stuff. And this was like the first time when Earth was seen from space. And so came to light were all these markings on mountains and crop circles and things that you really can't see when you're on the Earth. So that became the favorite theory for a while. Lots of books were being written about how aliens were really the ones that
chariots of the gods.
Yeah.
Eric von Däniken and people like that.
Yeah. Right. That was just huge, you know, for everybody. So that is all in this. And also, women's lib was kind of in its infancy at this time. So you see Joe in the iconic pantsuit that women started wearing, but they haven't gotten to the point where they were ever dealt with any real power or authority. So, of course, Joe is still, you know, more throwaway than women characters, you know, eventually became. So, yeah, it has everything that was very big in the early 70s. So I appreciated it more after reading all that. Yes.
Can I ask you a question? Do you like The Avengers?
I did like it, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're talking about Emma Peel?
Yeah.
The original ones.
Yeah, the original Emma Peel, yeah.
I always have to change – my mind has this little – shift of gears when someone mentions the Avengers, because to me the Avengers are
that's what I automatically think too, Kirby. Not the latest ones.
As a result of people confusing the two, they've actually started to refer to it. There's now a comic book based on it. They've actually started to refer to it as Steed and Miss Peel to avoid confusion. Also, there's some copyright issues now because I think Marvel went and trademarked the Avengers title.
Moving away from the Avengers podcast, moving back to Rhys Barton, in fact.
Oh, boy. It could be because I'm quite lightheaded because I'm on painkillers because I've got a very sore throat and a headache, but... as I was watching it, I didn't much like it. I can't really put my finger on why I didn't like it. I just thought that John Pertwee's annoyance showed after the first episode, and he just seemed angry at everyone, the character.
Except when he drove his motorbike.
Well, yeah, moments like that, but he felt like he was angry with everyone and short-tempered with everyone. And normally you could have a bit of the Doctor being the genius, but when he was talking to the unit scientists, I just thought that he was being rude to him instead of being the clever one trying to explain to him. And that felt out of character for any other Doctor.
Do you reckon that unit scientist was slightly what the unit scientist in Planet of the Dead was based on?
Malcolm.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah, probably.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Carry on.
But yeah, I saw actually, speaking of ties in with New Who or influences on New Who, as I've mentioned, I saw basically half the plot of Hungry Earth with the dome in this story. I also saw maybe partly where Stephen Moffat got the idea for the Weeping Angels, what with the chap with the wings,
yes.
And especially at the end when he turned into stone. But I don't know, it felt a little bit, like I said, I'm not feeling too well, so maybe that could be it, but it felt a little flat for me. But the positives that you've all mentioned, I agree with, but also the negatives stood out quite a bit for me, especially the padding and the many scenes of the Master chanting. I just thought that was a bit too much for me, but it was all right, to quote Ben.
Yeah, okay.
Who lives on?
I think that leaves Kirby.
I'm going to quote Ben as well. It was all right. Actually, this is the first time I'd seen this one all the way through, and I enjoyed it better than I thought I would because I really didn't have a good impression off of that first episode, which is why I've started it twice in the past. Whenever this DVD came out, I had to get the DVD as soon as it came out because everyone had all these good things to say about the demons. And I was just not impressed by that first episode.
Well, like I said, for people who saw it at the time, This Lives On is one of their favorites.
Yeah.
But it was a product of its time.
I liked it better than a lot of Pertwee stories that I've seen. I haven't seen all Pertwee stories. It's up there as one of the better ones I've seen. I tend to get bored by them for exactly the same reason you don't like the Mary. I don't like an Earthbound Doctor.
Right.
Fred was in here watching the story with me, and she liked it.
You had to think then.
she liked it. She really liked it. And as I said, she's been she's enjoying watching these older stories. We're jumping around. We've watched Pirate Planet already a couple of weeks ago, and we're in the middle of watching Invisible Enemy because I wanted to show her the beginnings of K-9.
K-9.
she's liking that one too. I don't have a whole lot to say about this one other than that because I was busy at Anime Week in Atlanta over the weekend, so I wasn't able to watch the extras or listen to the commentary.
Okay. Well, I can't get.
Let me think if there was anything else. it was okay.
Thank you. Well, I thought it was quite handy that you segued into the event you attended. Would you like to talk about that for a few moments?
It was an anime convention.
There we go.
The thing that amazed me. Well, first of all, I never went to anime conventions before a year ago because although I watch anime, I'm more into science fiction conventions and Doctor Who conventions. But my youngest daughter, Mary, and I can say her name, started last year. We went to the same one here in Atlanta. And this time I also got the membership rather than just dropping her off and walking around. The thing that amazed me is how much Doctor Who cosplay there was for an anime, for a Japanese animation convention. Yeah. There was an awful lot of Doctor Who stuff.
They did do a anime John Pertwee story, didn't they?
Yeah, someone put out a 5-minute or 3-minute thing a couple of years ago.
I think it's about eight or ten minutes, actually.
Kirby, mention about the pictures that you put on.
Yeah, I put all of the Doctor Who related cosplay and some other things, like
quite a bit others
pictures on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook page. And also I put all the rest of the pictures that I took and that Mary took on my personal Facebook page. All sorts of other things, Japanese animation, some American animation cosplay. As we were leaving, we were driving through the parking garage and saw this one car who had Alan Z on the back
AWA
window. AWA, yeah. Here we come.
AWA bound Alan Z. Yeah.
They also had some Doctor Who bumper stickers, which is pretty cool.
Excellent.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun, but boy, am I tired.
I'm pretty tired, but for different reasons. So you talk about one of the reasons why I'm tired. Of course, this weekend I had a busy time at work. They're trying to teach me cash in the cash office, which is very stressful because you have to concentrate quite a lot. And then I had lots of wedding stuff to do over the weekend. The frustrating part of it is that my podcasting mentor, that's Paul Wilson from the DWO WhoCast of the early days, came to the Isle of Wight. Mm. And I was in contact with him trying to arrange a drink, as he actually offered to meet up for a drink. But very frustratingly, I was filming a wedding all day and he was going early on Sunday morning when I had to go to work. I was quite disappointed. His wife or girlfriend is pregnant, so she got a bit tired. For the time I actually left the wedding at 9:30 in the evening, I said to him, it's possible I could get home, have something to eat, and then come out and meet you in the pub. And obviously pubs close at 11, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But he did say...
It's not obvious to me. I didn't know that.
He did say that he will be coming back to the Isle of Wight because his family is from the island and they come here quite a lot. So I'm looking forward to when he comes back and meet up and have a chat, maybe get him on the show because he is the man who got me into podcasting. Yes.
I just remembered one other thing dealing with the demons. As we're watching the character, what's the name of the character, Miss
Hawthorne?
Hawthorne.
Fred was watching. Fred reminded me that Miss Hawthorne reminds her of a character in the movie Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. Like Lady Toddington.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well done.
Yes, very true. Yes. Okay.
I think it's time we moved on to feedback. Now we have some feedback more from. Dr. Philip W. Cernot in relation to last week. Do we want to hear that one? Excellent. Well, basically, I should have played this last week, but I forgot. Basically, because it's his fault, because he entitled it Last Second and the Number Two. Pardon?
Did you hear what she said?
No.
She says, I'm preparing your dinner, sir.
Well,
and then she, and just as you said, what's that? She says, pig.
Same to you. But how's she going to get my dinner to me? It's quite a long way away from me at the moment. It's going to be a bit cold by the time it comes. Anyway, yes, this is Dr. Phil and his two doctors recording. Hopefully. Oh my God, it's 14 minutes long. I might have to go and make a cup of tea.
Even if I wanted to, Doctor, I have no authority to order Professors Kartz and Reimer to abandon their work.
Of course you have. You'll sanction all the experiments on this station.
And what reason would I give? That the Time Lords have expressed concern.
Dastari, our monitors have already detected ripples of up to 0.4 on the Bokka scale. Anything much higher would threaten the whole fabric of time.
They are well aware of the dangers, Doctor. They are responsible scientists.
They're incompetent meddlers.
Aren't you being a little ingenuous, Doctor?
What do you mean?
Hasn't it occurred to you that the Time Lords have a vested interest in ensuring that others do not discover their secrets?
Oh, I'm sure that's not the case.
I gather your own machine is no longer in the station. Isn't that because you didn't want Kartz and Reimer to get a look at it?
Look, I have a suggestion. Stop these experiments for the time being whilst my people study their work. If Kartz and Reimer really are on safe lines, I'm sure they'll be allowed to continue.
Allowed to continue?
I mean, there would be no further objection. in the first place. I have no authority to ask Katz and Reimer to submit their work for analysis. And in the second place, the Time Lords have no right to make such a grossly unethical demand. I've never heard such unmitigated arrogance.
And I've never heard such specious claptrap. Oh, don't you prate to me about ethics. The balance of the space-time continuum could be destroyed by your ham-fisted numbskulls.
I don't feel there's anything to be gained by prolonging this discussion, Doctor.
D'Astari, you have more letters after your name than anyone I know, enough for two alphabets. How is it you can be such a stupid, stubborn, irrational, and thoroughly objectionable old idiot? What are you smiling at, you hairy-legged Highlander?
I'm just admiring your diplomatic skills.
Pa! D'Astari?
He's got his head done, Doctor. I can't say I blame him.
I'll thank you not to speak in that appalling mongrel dialect.
I mean, he's gone to sleep.
He's no asleep. He's not asleep, Jamie. He's drugged.
He's what? What's that?
I would have thought a Jacobite would recognize that sound.
Professor!
Run, I say! Save yourself!
I hope this isn't the whole of the
with
two
the
doctors.
The final story you did for Doctor Who, which was the two doctors, was it yourself who played the classical guitar part on that?
I did some of it, but we actually did have a session player as well. It was a split duty, that, really. There were one or two little bits that I decided that would probably be better done as a session. So it was a mixture, actually.
Because some of it, especially the Spanish guitar work, seemed very consistent with composers like Giuliani and others. Was it difficult incorporating those elements with the radiophonic ones? Because as a contrast, your Suntaran theme is probably the best musical representation of them that there was in the classic series.
I think it was difficult, actually. I think I set myself quite a job. But it just goes back to the original idea of, you know, first of all, you organize your atmosphere. And I think it was the contrast between those two things that I was interested in doing. But yes, it is actually, obviously I've mentioned using a guitar now as a controller device. But obviously in those days, guitars really had to be recorded. It wasn't practical to use them in other ways. And because of that restriction, actually, it didn't give you quite so much versatility with the sound as you would have had if you'd actually originated it electronically. And so there was a slight bit more of a conscious pre-scoring for sessions and things like that in that story than there had been in previous ones, I think, for that reason.
I mean, as a contrast, there's a lot less music filling up the entire four episodes. But so would you say that contrast between the classical guitar and the radiophonic elements is probably what took up most of your time in that particular score?
Yes. I mean, for the reason you just mentioned, there isn't such a big score in any way. It wasn't. The overall job was not so big, but I actually had chosen to do it in a way that was a little bit more time consuming. So I think you're right. Yeah.
Shorter in the amount of incidental music as he had composed for the Five Doctors, the music in the Two Doctors is, however, filled with great contrast. While not a perfect story by any means, the score itself is rather successful on many levels. Howell's music, accompanying the scenes at Space Station Chimera, are atmospheric and harmonically rich and ambiguous, creating an effectively otherworldly backdrop for the action. Each of Howell's scores for Doctor Who vary greatly.
And while some harmonic and melodic elements remain from his earlier scores, the Two Doctors score is truly distinctive. Regarding the synthesizer-intensive part of the score, the Santarans have probably their best musical representation on screen since the Dudley Simpson scores to the Santaran Experiment and the Invasion of Time. Howell's theme is filled with great martial grandeur and menace, and even if the makeup and costumes are not the best representation of the Santarans on screen, you wouldn't know for Howell's stirring theme. With Dudley Simpson, Peter Howell contrasts the science fiction otherworldliness of the synthesizers with the use of guitar throughout the scene set in Seville, Sevilla, Spain. Influenced by Spanish flamenco music, several elements of flamenco guitar performance are highlighted in this score. A flamenco guitarist, usually referred to as toqueadores from the Andalusian pronunciation of tocadores, which means players, and flamenco guitar technique is often known as toque. Used a number of times in the score, the flamenco technique known as the rasqueado is used.
Robert!
The term, rasqueado, refers to strumming done with outward flicks of the right-hand fingers, done in a huge variety of ways. A nice rhythmic roll is obtained, supposedly reminiscent of the bailadors, flamenco dancers' feet, and the roll of castanets. The rasqueado can be performed with 5, 4, or 3 fingers. As other flamenco techniques such as the golpe, picado, el suapua, and tremolo are not used, I will move on to other aspects of guitar technique used. Similar to music by guitar composers such as Fernando Sor, who lived from 1778 to 1839, and Mauro Giuliani, who lived from 1781 to 1829, Peter Howell's guitar writing takes advantage of the guitar's chordal capabilities, but moreover the ability for a performer to arpeggiate chords, that is, to break them into individual notes in repeated patterns. In addition to composer Peter Howell performing the classical guitar material in The Two Doctors, Howell is joined by guitarist Les Thatcher, who has had a prolific career in guitars and banjo in many various genres, but highlighted here an instrument that is integral to the score of The Two Doctors. Modern word guitar and its antecedents have been applied to a wide variety of chordophones since antiquity. The English term guitar, German guitarra, and French guitarra, were based on the Spanish term guitarra. This term derived from the Andalusian Arabic guitarra, itself derived from the Latin cithara, which in turn came from the ancient Greek cithara, and is generally thought to ultimately trace back to tar in Old Persian, which means string. The modern guitar is a 6-stringed instrument that is commonly fretted and performed either by using the fingers of the right hand to produce sound or through the use of a plectrum. As the modern hollow and solid body electric guitars do not play a role in Peter Howell's score, and that we won't really be looking at their origins in this segment, it's important to know that they also descend, if at least partly, from the same origins as their acoustic counterparts. Circa 1200, Common Era, 2 instruments were in use, the guitarra moresca, the Moorish guitar, and the guitarra latina, Latin guitar. By the 14th century, moresca and latina distinctions were no longer applied to guitar-like instruments in Europe. In the 15th and 16th century, the Spanish vihuela de mano, also in Italian viola de mano, were used to describe the Spanish vihuela, an instrument considered to have been the seminal influence in the development of the guitar. The Fijuela de Mano, the plucked fijuela, was a term used to differentiate it from the Fijuela de Arco, one of the earliest terms applicable to the bowed fijuela, the viola de gamba, or the viol. The plucked fijuela, for the most part, had six courses, lute-like tuning in fourths and a guitar-like body. By the 16th century, the construction of the fijuela had more in common with the modern guitar, with curved one-piece ribs in contrast to the shapes of viols. The fijuela was popular in Spain and Italy, although the lute was the plucked string instrument of choice in the rest of mainland Europe. The last published music for fijuela appeared in 1576 as the five-course Baroque guitar began to emerge in documentation from the middle of the 16th century. The Baroque guitar enjoyed popularity in Spain, Italy, and France from the late 16th century through the mid-18th century. Visually, Renaissance and Baroque guitars are easily distinguished from each other, as the Renaissance guitar is very plain regarding decoration, and the Baroque guitar is very ornate, with ivory or wood inlays all over the neck and body. The modern guitar, or modern classical guitar as it's known today, in contrast to its predecessors, has six strings, typically made of synthetic nylon strings, with a wide, flat neck that allows the performer to easily play scales, arpeggios, and certain chords easily. Classical guitars are typically made of spruce or cedar tops and rosewood or mahogany backs and sides to enhance sustain. By contrast, and as to enhance our understanding of the music of this story, flamenco guitars are generally made with spruce tops and cypress or sycamore for the backs and the sides to enhance volume and emphasize the attack of the note. The first important period of guitar performance and composition includes composers such as Mauro Giuliani, Johann Kaspar Merz, Julio Regondi, and Fernando Sor. The importance of performer composers changes dramatically towards the 20th century as non-guitarist composers begin to compose for the instrument. These include Francisco Tárrega, Roberto Gerhard, and Heitor Villa-Lobos. Other significant composers of music for guitar include Luciano Berio, Stefan Bayer-Schabfleisch, Elliot Carter, Aldo Clementi, Franco Donatoni, Alberto Ginastera, Hans Fernahensa, Ernst Krennic, Maurice Ohana, and Michael Tippett, just to name a small sampling.
Just as well. Hey, what about Hank Marvin? You forgot Hank Marvin. Oh, Eric Clapton.
Doctor?
Oh, sorry.
Jamie, and keep an eye on the old gentleman, will you? Do try to keep out of my way in future and in past. There's a good fellow. The time continuum should be big enough for both of us. Just.
Do you know, I think I preferred you as an andragun.
Of all the conceited ingrates, do you know, you almost succeeded in concealing my natural charm.
Doctor, we're not going fishing again, are we?
No. From now on, it's a healthy vegetarian diet for both of us.
Thank you. There will be more from Dr. Phil later in the show. And the phone.
Of course.
Hello, can you pick me up?
Right, more feedback. This is from Thomas Reyes. It says, hello everyone, first saw this story about a year ago at a local movie theatre, and in a rare bit of good luck won both this and Carnival of Monsters on DVD. At the time I hadn't seen much of the Pertwee era.
Come on.
I had read a lot of praise for this story, so it was one that I was eager to see. On the whole, I like the demons, even though the story is too close to Quatermass and the Pit. I think what I enjoy the most is the comedic bits. Yeah. The interaction between the TV presenter and the professor, the local witch, and the scene where we see Joe suddenly trip are the highlights for me. I wonder if that was a deliberate trip. Never really thought about that. And did anyone else have a problem with how the doctor treats Joe? We talked about that, didn't we? Especially when he's correcting her in front of everyone for criticising the Briggs tactics, something the doctor himself does constantly. I think that about sums it up for me. I hope you all excuse...
Did you fail math as well as science?
Yeah, yeah. I hope you all excuse me if this seems rushed and incoherent. I really must get ready for work. Thank you, Thomas. I hope I read that
Thank you, Thomas.
Okay, now, everyone's done well this week, so I won't have to sing at the end of the episode. Instead, we'll have the second instalment of Dr. Phil's stuff, which is about... what's it going to be about?
What about Captain Kirk?
I'm just explaining.
Yes. Oh, okay. I thought you were rounding
instead
up.
Of me, instead of me, is this going to be another 14 minutes?
Well, if you'd allow me to explain and stop interrupting, otherwise magic will be released. Instead of singing, you will have Dr. Phil at the end of the episode. So if you haven't got time, you'll have to listen to it when the episode goes out. Anyway, we've got some
release
audio.
Release the hounds, Smithers.
At least I hope we have. Yeah. Hang on, what's this here? Sorry, he sent it to me twice. That's nice of him, isn't it?
Excellent.
Good evening, 20 Megabyters. It's Andy Linney here. It is 10:28 on the evening of Friday, the 27th of September. I'm sitting here. I've had a nice day. The lovely Dawn has just returned from a night at the mates. I've had a day working at home because I've been extracted from the bathroom. Really exciting, that. And then I've had an afternoon at the cricket, possibly my last day at the Oval. Came home, did a four-mile run, then sat down with two well-grilled angered steak burgers. By the way, my smoke alarms both work, apparently. And then sat and watched The Demons. Now, The Demons is a story that I can remember quite well, because I've actually been watching it first time round. I don't know, 7 or 8 at the time. But actually, in 1990, I was between jobs. I just left the police force and was about to join National Power Swindon. But also my good friend Richard Molesworth, he of Missing Presumed White fame and also the Restoration Team. Very good friend of mine. He was out of work at the same time, and we spent the summer... while we're both temping before taking up full-time jobs, trying to run the country, looking at different things. Now, one of the things we did, we actually went down to Oldbourne and had a day out at Oldbourne, went to the Royal White Stones, went to the station where they filmed The King's Demons. I've got some pictures somewhere, which I probably will put on my Facebook group, of Richard and I at Oldbourne in 1990, 23 years ago, my God. What's interesting is, if anyone knows Richard, they probably won't recognise him because... well, in 1990, he would be about 21, I think. He had hair. If you know Richard now, well, he doesn't anymore have hair. Anyway, that's immature. But what we did, we went to Oldbourne, we went to the pub that was at Clovenhoof, and there's some pictures we took around there. So, like I said, I put them in a Facebook group. Anyway, I watched The Demons. What I watched was the two-part showing they did on BBC Four about a couple of years ago, when they did Archaeology Night, and they split into two parts. And it was good because what it meant was they actually cleaned this re-recording up a lot, and it was done as a widescreen thing as well, which meant you actually lost the top and bottom of the screen, but I think you actually gained a lot because it was a cleaner episode. Now, what I think you also have to... I'll try again with that. I will try again. Big pardon, apologies for that. Right, what you always remember the master then? The master was always okay. He was evil. He was nasty. He was always totally urbane and polite, because Francis Joe was always Miss Grant. When in the what was the second episode that I saw, which I guess would be part 4 or part 5, when he attacked Captain Yates, it was Captain. He was never ever unfailingly polite to any of his victims, and I think this is what shows the master was a man who, I suppose he was a man, but he was evil, nasty, but why was he so polite, unfailingly polite to other people? Interesting comment. I mean, I think it shows a lot of, you know, he would respect other people. He also respected the doctor as an adversary. I remember writing years ago when I used to write for the Celestial Toymaker. I mean, this is a toy room. I'll get it right in a second. When Keith Hopkins was the editor, I used to write for him because Keith's a good mate of mine. And I actually remember commenting the fact that the master, even I'll get that right as well. I'm doing not doing very well. Okay, I've had a couple of beers, but yay. He might be nasty, you know. The analogy I used was he would help an old lady cross the road, but he'd shrink her first and make it easy. Not quite sure it's going to be demons, but anyway. But the demons. Now, the demons is one of the classic Doctor Who stories. It really is, because it shows he and the Master. And you actually do really wonder, what is the relationship with the two of them? You know, are they brothers? Are they in some way related? Because it really just shows it up. Where, the way they two go together, the way they work against each other, but also the way they work with each other. There's very definitely something more. Now, anyone who, like me, comes from a big family and has sibling relationships, sibling rivalry, as I certainly did with my older sister, let us not go there anymore.
Yes.
However, what you see, there's definitely something there. There's more than just two people, more than just two people who just know each other vaguely. There's something sharper, something harder there that actually just mean they are siblings in some way, shape or form. I know this has been hinted at in a lot of ways. Are they brothers? Are they... No, father and son is not the right thing. No, it's not. I would actually say they are brothers in some way, shape or form. Anyway, let's have a wine. This is rather good wine. This is it's a glass of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, Robert actually did comment. Yes, he said every time we... every time I actually turn up on the podcast doing a bit of feedback, I see a glass of wine in my hand. Well, why not? I mean, you know, it's nice. I've sat there watching a very good Doctor Who story with a nice glass of wine, so why not? So, what have we learnt, I think, about the story scene today? Well, we've talked about the relationship of the Doctor and the Master and how close it is and how, you know, what does it actually tell us about the Doctor, about the Master, about who they are and what how they really work together. But I think some really interesting things as well. We've talked, again, about the Doctor... I'll get it wrong. The Master. Beg your pardon, Adam, edit it out, please. Please do so. The Master is always unfailingly polite to his adversaries, because that's the way he is. You know, that shows the respect he has for the people he is fighting against. You know, he's never anything utterly respectful to the Doctor. He never insults him, does he? You look at that. It's very interesting. He's always... He respects him as an adversary and sees what he's capable of doing and therefore takes him very, very seriously. You know, I think that's why in the story we're seeing today in the Daemons that Azal could not cope with somebody who's prepared to stand up against him. The Doctor was prepared to give it up and say, no, I don't want this. And then Joe stood up and said, well, no, you can't do this to the Doctor. And that's what the Master cannot understand, is how... I think there's a very good phrase, is power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I think you've got a very good phrase there. Now, there's some very, very good moments in the story itself. Now, Jo has been attacked, and she's in bed. And Mikey Yates comes charging after her. And he comes bursting into her bedroom. Sorry. You want to burst into the young lady's bedroom? Well, yeah, I don't think you do, do you? We also have one of the classic names for a character, Bert the Landlord. I mean, that's brilliant, that is. I mean, Bert the Landlord. You just have to laugh out loud at that. You know, it's a classic name. It's along the lines of the poacher that we had in Spearhold of the Autumns. I can't think which one it is at the moment. Okay, it's late night, but yay. Now, what is interesting is the way that the whole unit team relate to each other as well. You've got Nick Courtney, you've got Benton, you've got Yates. But look at the relationship with all of them. What it shows is a great deal of mutual respect between all three of them. That they all, at various times, can be in command. Now, the Brigadier, at the most times, he's leading it on. But if Yates says something, and the Brigadier recognises right, he'll do it. I think if Benton can actually, one or two times, will say, we should be doing this. And they will listen to him. Because what it is, it's the unit family thing, isn't it? And I'm just enhancing this about unit family, which of course you can't see, but it's the way it goes, isn't it? I mean, Reese, I mean, you're an actor, you'll understand that. How about it's more than just the physical and the vocal. You know, it's how you put persona across. And it's what they do to each other. The way they interact with each other shows the mutual respect and the trust, I suppose you could even call it love, of each other. I know that's perhaps going perhaps a little bit too far, but the way they look at each other, the way they see each other, the way they understand each other, is part of what we call the unit family. And of course you have Jo herself. I mean, it's when Jo takes the rise out of the Brigadier, and the Doctor says, he is your superior officer, and you can see her going back, Oh dear, yes, I've said the wrong thing there, haven't I? Now, of course, we have the great character. You have some great characters in this story. You know, we have the White Witch, who challenges everything the Doctor stands up for, yet can understand what the Doctor stands up for. I think that, again, it's what is good there is challenging the Doctor, whereas the Doctor, in the scene where he's tied up, is saying, no, I am not a magician. I am not a sorcerer. I'm not using magic. And that is so much Pertwee, because what he's showing is he uses science and can bamboozle other people through the application of science. And what's interesting, you look at the villagers, suddenly they turn around completely, having been totally behind the Magister. Yeah, okay. Magister, Master, yeah. But suddenly they've turned it completely round and they're behind the Doctor. When they're pinning Bert the Landlord down before he gets literally blown away, before they pin the Master down, suddenly, well, the Doctor's our guy, isn't he? He's our hero, so we're going to save him and going to take him on board. Anyway, the last thought I've got is, now, we're going back a couple of 3 years now to the Flashing Blade podcast. Yes, okay, rival of yours, Adam, but, yeah, okay. Now, it was about 3 years ago, and what they did was what would the Brigadier Pizza be? You know, the Brigadier, how could he do it? You know, he's sort of haggis, blah, 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 blah. Now, I thought about this. Now, hang on a minute, we're missing the point here. The Brig would order a pizza, and it could be any kind of pizza. I'm doing hand signals again, which you can't even see, so I'll put a glass of wine up. Cheers, folks. This is really a nice dry drop of wine. I do like dry white wine. So, Reese, when I come out to Australia and meet you, you and your lovely mother Kate and your father, whose name unfortunately I don't know at the moment, but when we do turn and meet you, nice drop of white wine, please, we appreciate it. Anyway, right, the Brigadier Pizza. Now, it's not that pizza's the main thing. The Brig is a gentleman. The Brig is always courteous, always polite. And, of course, the Demons has a classic line in it, which I will come to in a couple of seconds. So when the Brig orders the pizza, it's going to make sure of several things. One, there's enough, because he wants the side order to be right. So he'll make sure he's got the pizza right and the side order's right. Secondly, he's going to make sure there's enough for Joe and the Doctor and Mike Yates and Sergeant Benton and himself. And also, they're all hungry. So he all wants it fairly quickly. So he'll order the pizza and he'll say, there's my pizza order. Oh, and by the way, chap with wings, 5 rounds, rapid. Be seeing you.
Thank you, Andy. But what about the lovely Dawn? Where was the lovely Dawn? That was a long one, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's what she said.
I'm not going to complain after getting literally no feedback for such a long period of time. Oh, by the way, last week I forgot to mention this, but this got sent in by a chap called Ian Kirk.
Jenkins?
Yeah. Chap with the wings there. 5 rounds rapid.
So thank you for that, Ian. But he also sent in...
Sackdop, Petty Begum, It Newt, Ole. The Demons by someone or other. Doctor Who and Miss Witch. Yeah. Watch that gargoyle. Don't even blink. I did not enjoy this story much. Everybody seems so cross. The Doctor is Mr. Grumpy Face.
He was.
The creature's reduced his spaceship to a few feet long. That saves on the budget. They built a model and they don't have to do any model shots.
It's only a model.
The Demons have guided mankind since the beginning. Perhaps there with the silence. I suppose it would be better watching one episode a week. Then when the Doctor amazes someone, yet again, with his remote control car, you would think, oh yes, he did that last week. On the commentary they point out a few errors. The heat barrier is supposed to be 10 miles across, centred on the church. It is right next to a signpost which says 1 mile to the village. Since this Doctor is stuck on Earth, they have to find Earthbound stories. This creature who is worshipped but is really an alien has been popular with Doctor Who over the years. The most recent was Rings of Akaten.
Moffat?
Yeah.
Don't try this at home, but I have watched Time Crash. And Master Chant's gibberish in that also. John Pertwee was never my favourite Doctor. The Staggering Stories podcast must like Pertwee. Because they have the spare head from space.
Best podcast.
Yeah. What is that joke?
What was that, Reese?
You almost talked over the joke at the end.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, but you mentioned the Staggering Stories podcast. They never mentioned us.
Oh, it's something that Ian...
Hang on, Mary.
The Staggering Stories podcast must like Pertwee. Oh. Because they have the spare head from space.
Thank you.
Now.
Was it really worth replaying?
Was it worth the
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to bring up something that Ian mentioned that I meant to add to my, you know, this story is a product of its time. Something that people were popularly doing at the time
was
playing records backwards. Huh. To look for hidden messages.
Yes.
And so all this saying of things backwards, you know, is also very popular.
Indeed. Right. And I'd just like to say, obviously, people have got the idea. Send in feedback. I don't sing. But I have had a request from somebody who said, can I sing There's No Other Way by Blur? But I won't be singing that this week. But just bear in mind, if we don't get the feedback in, I will be singing that song as soon as we don't. So just send in your feedback to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. It's now time for You Won't Get This One.
And I won't.
Why? Why won't you?
Matthew will.
Yes, I wonder who's going to win this week.
Maybe.
Not me. Maybe. I only watched it once.
Mm. All right, hang on.
Me too, Kirby.
I'm just
back
writing down the order in a random way. You right there?
No, not really. I've got a cold. But anyway, we'll carry on.
Well, wrap
I'll
up.
Just die in the corner.
I'll make you warmer.
When you said wrap up, I thought you meant you wanted me to stop recording.
No.
Okay. Yeah, thanks everyone for feedback. It was great, wasn't it? Quite long, but I'm not complaining. I'm not like all these other podcasts that say, oh, keep your feedback down to 30 seconds. Although, obviously, if we do get lots and lots of it, we'll have to do a special separate feedback show.
Well, most of them don't even play the feedback they get.
I know. Well, wouldn't it be nice to be in that position, eh? But we're not, so we play it. We've got more to come. Like I say, instead of my song this week, we've got Dr. Phil's. Mind you, it says Pirate Planet, so maybe I have to save that for next week.
Sonic Screwdriver.
Yeah, he sent in stuff on Pirate Planet as well.
In
so
that
I'm
case,
save that.
Yeah, I'll save it. Sorry, I misread it. So I misread the previous one when it said two doctors because he wrote the number two. Oh, there. No, forget what I said about Dr. Phil at the end of the show because that would be a bit silly playing a Pirate Planet, or as he calls it, Parrot Planet, on this one. Anyway, it's time for the You Won't Get This One, and the first question goes to Matthew.
Oh,
who is
points.
Frightened? Who is frightened to death in the churchyard?
Oh, it's the old man whose name I can't remember.
Well, you need to remember. That's part of the question. Go on in, Kirby.
It's Frank, isn't it?
No, the answer was Jim. Mary.
Yes.
Who Jim is in Mary. Charge of the archaeology? What a stupid word that is. Who is in charge of the
archaeological
dig? Yes, that.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Who is in charge of the... Robert, I'll try that again. Who's in charge?
Archaeological dig.
Wait till I've asked. Who's in charge of the?
Archaeological dig.
Oh my God!
What?
Who's in charge of the archaeological dig, Mary?
Yes.
I
know.
Is it Hopkins?
No, go on then, Robert.
No.
Professor Horner.
Correct.
Remember they made a joke about putting in his thumb, what's he going to pull out?
Yeah. Okay.
Reese.
Yeah.
Who is the BBC Three presenter covering the dig?
I know.
Alistair Fergus.
He is correct. Robert.
Yes. Yes, sir.
What is supposed to be inside Devil's Hump?
Oh, my
goodness, I can't remember.
What hump?
All I remember is that there's a spaceship in there. That's...
No, that's what, but that's what's in there, but what it's supposed to be in there.
Oh, no, wasn't it supposed to be a ceremonial thing from, I don't know, ancient times?
No, no, go on then.
Let me try.
I'll go on
then,
Mary.
Is it a tomb of a some kind of a warrior chief?
I'll give you that, Mary. Sorry, Matthew, I know you sort of more nearly got in there, but Mary really did force her way through to the front of the queue for that one. The actual answer, and I'll give you a point for it, was the tomb of a Bronze Age chieftain.
Oh, well done.
Sun Tzu, I think.
Kirby.
Master.
What is the name of the landlord of the pub?
Haven't the foggiest.
Nope.
I know.
Go on then, Robert.
It's Bert, the landlord.
Matthew.
Yes.
Who nearly hits Miss Hawthorne over the head with a rock?
I know. The police constable.
Yeah, but what's his name?
Oh. I know.
Groom.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mary.
Yes.
What is the name of the old vicar? The one that gets replaced by the master.
Oh, I don't remember.
Anybody?
I forget the name.
The answer is Canon Smallwood. Not Canon Torchwood. Canon Smallwood. Rhys.
Right.
That's a heck of a name.
What does Benton complain that he and Yates are stuck with while the Brigadier enjoys a night out?
Oh, a television and corned beef sandwiches?
Yes! Robert.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
What does the Professor tell the TV floor manager that he will try his best to be?
Bugger, I don't know this.
No, not that. Go on in, Matthew.
Absolutely super.
Correct.
Yeah. Kirby. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was funny.
Master?
Complete the master's line. As my will...
so mote it be.
Correct.
Oh.
And after those rounds of questions... In last place, with 1 point, Mary. In third place, with 2 points, Robert and Kirby. In second place with 3 points, Matthew. And in the lead with 4 points, Rhys.
Oh,
moving
what?
On. Shut up, Magic.
Oh, bloody hell.
Right. Matthew.
Well, welcome down there with the rest of us.
Matthew.
Yes.
What was the score of the match Benton and Yates were watching when they missed the dig on TV?
Oh my gosh.
13-0. Might as well have been 113-0.
Yes, all right. You only get 2 points. Mary.
Yes.
What is Miss Hawthorne's first name?
That's so
Is it Abigail?
No. Anybody?
Oh, I know.
Go on in, Reese.
I know the actress's Ollie. First name.
That's but... correct. Say that answer again, Reese, because Kirby talked over it.
Sorry.
Olive.
It is correct, right.
That's right.
The next
is
one is,
Popeye around?
Is for Reese. Reese.
Yes.
Who is Stanley Mason? Basically, who does he play?
I know.
I don't.
Go on then, Robert.
Fuck.
Correct. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What line of a Venusian lullaby did the Doctor recite?
The first line?
No. The actual line itself.
I know.
I don't know how it went.
Go on then, Matthew.
Close your eyes, my dear, or three of them at least.
There's only one word out, so I can't
that. Was my darling.
It is my darling, but it was only one word out, so I'll have to
Wasn't that
it.
Still the first line of the Venusian lullaby, though? So
yes.
Am I technically
no,
right?
No, I said what line? I'm not going to wait. It's stupid. Anyway, Kirby.
Master.
What alien creatures does Benson mention?
Haven't the foggiest.
I know.
Robert went, just before Matthew said, I know. Go on then, Robert.
Cybermen and Daleks.
Correct. And after that round of questioning, we have...
No.
What?
He says, like, the Axons and the Cybermen.
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Right. Well, I'll give Robert a point for getting the Cybermen and you a point for getting the Axons. Is that fair?
That's better.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I do
apologise for nearly getting that wrong, was there? A point deducted from me. And of course, scores then, therefore, after
just
that round.
That bit out.
No, I won't. In last place, Mary with 1 point. In fourth place, Kirby with 2. In third place, Robert with 4. In second place, Reese with 5. And in the lead, surprise, surprise, with 7 points, Matthew. Talking
I remember
Matthew,
when I used to be good at these.
Right, Matthew. Matthew.
It would help if I'd see it more than once.
We didn't have Matthew back then, though.
Hang on, the phone's ringing. For God's sake.
Meow. Whose cat?
No, that's my cat.
Whose cat was that? Oh, does she want to go out?
Yeah. He's been going in and out throughout this whole thing. I keep...
Sorry. Yeah.
Congratulations.
I ended up having to throw my mom's cat Gizmo out of the room.
Because I'm trying to record and I've only got 15 minutes to get it finished.
You know what, though? Let's not go to the side of you, please. Thank you. It's because the Felicia's done a grown-up thing for once. Okay, nearly got mine over.
Haven't you got school stuff to do? Haven't you got school stuff to do?
Stop sharing.
Pardon?
Yeah,
oh, congratulations. Can you do another grown-up thing and shut up and let me get on with the podcast? And can you call me about half an hour?
I'm going to, London in October.
Congratulations. Can you call me back in half an hour? Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Then.
So Mary, Mary,
yeah,
Mary, did you put the cat out?
I did.
I didn't know he was on fire.
Okay, right. This question is for Matthew, I believe, if I've got my calculations correctly. Who plays Charlie, who appears during the Master's speech to the villagers?
That would be John Scott Martin, who we mentioned earlier.
Mary,
never heard of him.
Yeah. Who is the Brigadier's bespectacled scientific soldier?
Is it that Sergeant Osgood?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Even though when my auto spell checker has put down so good. It was really annoying. Rhys.
Yes.
What is the name of the village pub?
Oh.
I don't know.
Anybody? Go on then, Robert.
Devil's Hoof?
No, it's Cloven Hoof.
The real pub has the sign.
It's got the sign,
from the show inside of it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Robert?
Yes, sir.
Right. What is the demon's first word?
Hello?
Oh, my God.
I should deduct a point for jumping in, but as it was a joke, I'll let you off. Go on, then.
Thank you.
Oh, I don't know. What was it?
That's what I'm asking you.
I don't know.
Anybody?
I always know. Something about the Master.
Matthew?
Speak!
Correct. Kirby? Oh.
Master?
What technical problem do the unit team run into a little... trouble with? I'll read that a bit more correctly. What technical problem do the unit team run into a little trouble with?
I don't know specifically. They had to reverse the polarity, though.
No, that's not the problem. That's what they did. Yeah. That's what they did to solve the problem. Anybody?
Well, let me try.
Go on in, Mary.
Is it the?
No, they didn't say that.
Feedback phasing.
Is correct. After that round of questioning, the current scores are. In
I don't know why
last
I made
place.
It.
Kirby with 2 points. In joint third, Mary and Robert with 4. In second place, Rhys with 5. And in the lead, Matthew with 10. This next question is for Matthew. When the Doctor is about to be burned for witchcraft, who does he claim to be?
That's easy.
The great wizard Queequeg-Quad.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
What does the Master order Joe to be clothed in?
Nakedness.
No, that's what you hope, Robert. Completely different type of question.
Well, I know he wanted her in that special dress. Yeah,
he called it something. You don't know.
Yeah.
Go on in, no, Robert. Robert?
No, I don't know. I was just joking.
Okay, anybody?
I have no idea.
It's a ceremonial tabard. Okay, right. No. Rhys. Oh.
Yes.
What does the Master... Hang on, the words have gone a bit funny. I think it's supposed to say, what does the Master say when the Doctor arrives in the cavern?
Bloody hell, what are you doing here?
No, it's Hell's Teeth, Robert. I can't remember.
Anybody?
I've been waiting for you, maybe.
He tells her that he's been expecting him.
I'll give you a point for that because it was quite close, and I'll give you a point, Matthew, as well. The actual line was, "Ah, Doctor, I've been expecting you." Right, Robert.
I get a comedy.
No, you don't, Robert.
First, you were there.
Who does the Brigadier order to shoot the chap with the wings there? Five rounds, rapid.
Who? Yeah. So, what's the guy's name? It's a corporal, isn't it?
Yeah. So, what's his name?
I know it's a corporal.
I know.
Reece said I know first, so he's going to come in with the answer in a minute. If you
don't. But don't I get a chance to answer?
Yes, well, go on then.
I've no idea what the guy's name is.
Reece
Jenkins.
Correct.
Kirby. Jenkins.
Master.
After failing to stop Bok with bullets, what does Yates order Benton to get ready?
I know.
Correct. And yes. After that round of questioning, in last place, or should I say joint last place, is Mary, Robert, and Kirby with 4 points. In second place with Reece with 7 points. And in the lead with 13 points is Matthew, whose question is next.
It's quite a party down there, isn't it?
Who did the Doctor compare the Master to?
Genghis Khan and Adolf Hitler.
Correct. I was going to give you a point for each anyway. Mary.
Yes?
What does the demon cry after Jo offers herself to save the Doctor?
That's not compared.
Point deducted, even though it's not the right answer.
I don't remember.
Anybody? No?
Oh, I know now.
Oh, she knows now. Come on then.
Can I do it?
Go on then.
It does not relate.
Near enough. The actual answer is this action does not relate. But because you use the word relate and not compute, I'm going to give you the...
Okay.
Okay, Reece.
Yeah, when he said compute, that suddenly... Not...
Yeah, well, he's got a point deducted there. Where do we get on?
Making a joke.
Yeah, we're too close to the answer.
I made a joke earlier and you didn't deduct from me.
I can do if you like. Reece.
Give him his points back.
Right, where do we get up to? I've lost where I was now. Right, then, this is for Reece, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Who arrests the Master?
Who arrests him?
Yes.
Benton.
Correct. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What does the Doctor tell Jo to do at the end of the story?
To get changed into something...
No, it's the words he uses.
I know. That's...
Get out of that ridiculous garb.
That's funny. I got I know from Matthew and the answer from Reece. Very strange scenario there.
Well, he tells her to get changed out of that sacrificial gift wrapping.
Well, I'll give the point to Reece, but that was because he was absolutely spot on. Sorry about that, Matthew. But I like the way that everybody. Right. I like the way everybody knows what they have to do to get points in this game now. Right. Right, this next question is for Kirby.
Master.
What happened at the dig at the end of the story?
Blew up, didn't it?
More or less. Well, the answer is the spaceship self-destructed, but that's essentially okay. Right. And with a very limited amount of questions left, the current scores are, in last place, Robert with 3 points. In second to last place, or in third, depending on which way you want to look at it, Mary and Kirby with 6 points. In second place, with 10 points, Reece, essentially in the lead. And in the lateral lead, with 15 points, is Matthew. And the last load of questions come as follows, with Matthew. When the Doctor tells the Master he will deal with him later, what does the Master say the Doctor is?
You are always an optimist.
I'll give you a point, because it wasn't exactly word for word. Anyone want to try and get the word for word answer?
You always were an optimist, weren't
point
you?
Point deductive for being exact, saying exactly say what Matthew said.
No, I did. He said...
You didn't.
No. The answer is forever the optimist. Okay. Right, next question goes to Mary.
Okay.
What does
forever the pedantist.
Be quiet. What does Miss Hawthorne want to do with Sergeant Benton? There we go. This is going to be interesting.
Ooh. Mary.
The mind races. I don't know.
Anybody?
She wants him to dance around the maypole.
No, it's not the word she used. Anybody?
Ooh.
Put over her knee, his knee,
no,
and
the,
give her good
the answer is fertility dance. Reece.
Yes. Just as bad.
What does Yates propose to the Brigadier?
Oh, this is easy. We're talking about.
Correct. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What does the smell of flowers make a change from, according to the doctor?
I know.
Farts.
No, come on. It's nearly right, actually, but go on.
Yeah. Yes. Oh,
I know.
Ah, sweaty socks, I know.
Right, go on in, Kirby.
It's a change from the smell of sulfur.
Correct. Right, Kirby.
Yeah, that was close.
The last question of this week's show. Who directed The Demons?
Oh, that's easy. I know.
Go on then, Robert.
Christopher Barry.
Is correct. Okay, and the final scores for this week's, you won't get this one. In last place, with 5 points, Robert. Mm. In fourth place, with six points, Mary. In third place, with 7 points, Kirby. Yeah. In second place, and essentially the winner, with 12 points, Reese Place.
Essentially not the winner.
Matthew with 16 points.
Yay, Matthew! Welcome back!
Great cat!
Yeah. You sound like the crowd at the end of the story.
Yes, the challenge is always.
I have a question.
I do the questions. I do the questions on this show.
Well, this isn't part of the quiz.
Oh, okay. Then.
I'm calling on the pedants out there. Yeah, yeah. Does anybody know why the doctor's called Professor Queequeyquod?
Good question. I have no idea.
Because it's the Latin forms of who.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Mary.
They talk about it in the commentary and such.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I think we're just about squeezing some news. BFI premiere of Adventures in Time and Space. BFI are going to be showing up on the 12th of November. Interesting, they don't seem to be saying when it's going to be on the telly. That's Adventure in Time and Space.
They've already announced when it's going to be on TV. It's going to be on November 23rd.
Yeah. Have they?
Yeah, it was announced along with Day of the Doctor and all the other good junk. Okay.
Right, yeah. Listen to this. Listen to this. Yes. Extra tickets to the BBC's 50th celebration at the Excel Centre in London have been made available with a ballot opening today. Damn, on Thursday, because I could have got my ticket to get my picture taken with Matt Smith. That's really annoying, actually. They're supposed to send me... I'm not going to complain, actually. They're supposed to send me emails with news on this particular event. That's particularly big news. And I clearly have missed out on possibly getting my picture taken with somebody. But never mind. By the way, I'm going to that. I don't know if I mentioned it before. Yeah, so it says, convention which takes place on 23rd to 24th of November inclusive.
Has Alicia decided she's not going?
Oh, we don't know until it happens. We'll have a range of activities, including panels with key cast members from 50 years of Stop Messing Around with Your Microphone, Matthew.
And clocks.
And special effects shows, stunt workshops, quizzes and games. After tickets, sold up, blah, blah, blah. Applications can be made by online or by phone.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. So I won't be happy if I missed out on a chance of having a picture taken. In fact, I might actually phone that number to complain later on that I didn't get any notification.
Yes. Yeah, good.
Right, there's been some trailers, apparently. Anniversary episode Sting.
No, Master. They haven't.
Master.
No, they're not trailers. They are not trailers.
Master.
What are they, then?
Rubbish.
Well, they're calling them stings, which is about all
they're very, very, very quick. 11 seconds, one of them.
Yeah.
And there's another.
What it does is it flashes on screen the hashtag save the day for those people out there who use Twitter, which I and Matt Smith are not amongst.
Okay.
And that's it.
Details announced for Splendid Chaps 10 Sex. Well, that's all about, but something to do with the podcast, which I don't.
10 Sex.
That's what it says. 10 Stroke Sex.
Absolutely.
Fan roundup. Mythmakers presents Golden Year celebrates timeless elements of Doctor Who that have appealed to the show's followers for half a century. I think that's some sort of magazine, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's
a fanzine because I submitted a story to it and mine didn't get picked.
That's no good, is it? Must be rubbish then. Doctor Who anniversary celebrated at BAFTA. BAFTA Cymru, that's BAFTA Wales for you and me and anybody else that doesn't speak Welsh. So that's it for news. That was quick, wasn't it? Anybody else got any news? I mean, I just spoke about news. Go on then, Matthew. Oh, go on then, Kirby. Who's going to be speaking? I'm getting confused. I'm trying to rush.
Matthew, go ahead.
I didn't really actually have anything to say.
I will be posting, and as soon as I can do it on the Facebook page, the subtitle showing the master saying, "Do you, Doctor? You always were an optimist, weren't you?"
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
So there.
Talking about the that got me thinking about something to do with the podcast group, the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group.
Oh, how many people are on there now?
Yes, I was going to mention our new members. That seemed to work, doesn't it? Mention new members, but that's people join, and then so they can get a mention on the show. I'm coming up with some great ideas. Sing to stop to make people send in feedback, and mention people's names to get people to join the group. So,
thank you.
Pardon? You're thanking me? Well, thank you.
I just added something to you. Just said thank you.
Oh, thank you. No, thank you, Robert. As far as I can make out, we have Nicole Mazza, Doctor Who Guidebook, Hassan Saeed, Bob James Sherwood, John Escamilla. Who, is he in a relation to Eric? No? Okay.
Do we have Eric Escamilla, do we?
He used to do that podcast with that chap from TARDIS Tavern, didn't he? Whovian Time and Laurie Greenwald Campos. So thank you, everybody. More the merrier. Yes. We've got 188
Welcome
members, two of which are Ian Kirk.
Matthew, who was the other person?
He's bipolar.
Who was the other person who got what the master said correctly, or what the master said correctly?
I think it was me and you.
Yes, that's what
me
I thought.
Me and you. You and me. Anyway.
Sore losers.
Next Maybe. Week.
No, there's the picture. There's
Never
my proof.
Mind. Never mind.
Hold on. Adam, you said you would not sing if you got feedback, and you just
that's
sang.
That's a different type of singing. I meant a whole song. That doesn't count as a whole song. Just remember, the song has already been lined up if nobody sends in any feedback. If you don't get enough feedback, and that is Blur and There's No Other Way. Next week, we'll be discussing The Pirate Planet, which I will tell you in advance is one of my favourite and probably my actual favourite story of all time. So it'd be pointless me reviewing it, really, but I'll have a go. Anybody else got anything to say before we wrap up?
Matthew and I both put on the Facebook page
about how we're more available on Monday than Sunday.
Well,
so
that's
fine.
It'll be Monday then, if that's all right with everybody.
I would like to get back to a Sunday sometime.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
And the weekend after that, I'm out of town. So, again, I would be more available on Monday.
No,
I won't be available at all.
Therefore, we know the next couple of weeks will probably end up being Monday. Sorry about that. But we will try and get back to a Sunday when it's convenient
for
everybody, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Is it okay?
And poor Robert might pay attention next time.
Poor Robert.
Yeah, I might actually be awake at 2:40 in the morning, I was this morning.
I'm pretty sure we've
thinking
missed,
there was a podcast.
I'm pretty sure we've missed a few things. Sorry about anybody who decided to skip to the end just to listen to Dr. Phil's next segment. That will be next week. Yeah. Sorry about that, Paul.
Yes.
Once again, apparently Alicia said that she's got a couple of friends at school, massive Doctor Who fans, and think the show's really cool. I'm not too sure. I told
a couple of people at who I took pictures of at AWA. About the show, and they said they were going to listen.
Right. But that's different. Alicia says
Can
she's got friends that actually do
related
listen.
To that real quick.
All right. I have to go.
Okay, bye-bye, Mary.
Bye.
Listen to the story later.
Bye, Mary.
Bye. Yeah, Mary, have a good day.
Thank you. You all too.
Yeah, go on in, Matthew.
Well, I mentioned I'm recording at my mom's, and I came in after I got off work, and I was talking to my mom, and she goes, I actually tried to listen to one of your podcast episodes the other day. I went, oh, really? And she goes, well, I didn't have any idea what you guys were talking about. I went, well, you're not a Doctor Who fan. She goes, yeah. And then she added insult to injury, and she goes, by the way, has anybody ever told you sound like a girl?
Is she talking about Mary?
No, she was talking about me.
Oh, dear.
Don't worry, Matthew, I get that.
Are you sure you really want that put out on the show?
Well, I'm sure somebody will get a good laugh out of it.
Maybe.
Your mom.
Also, we're getting close to sufficient time for stories again.
Sorry? Yes, I know. Well, we'll put something up and it will be random.
Also,
yes.
Also,
oh, I tell you what I'd like to review. Sorry, can I interrupt you? I'm going to do anyway, so
yes.
You might as well let me do.
Yes.
I've got this DVD. And it's
Deborah Does Dallas.
Doctor Who. And it's a story I've never seen before. It's called Scream of the Shalker. It's on DVD, and I've got it in my hand here.
Yes, Adam.
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
I started watching that the other day.
Well, there you go. I haven't watched
it
at all.
I watched all the all the extras before I started. I only watched the first episode.
Could you give it? I pulled the Kirby and watched all the extras first.
I don't have it yet. I'm not sure when I can get it. Can you wait a
No. Of course it's going to be a while because it's not on the schedule. I'm just saying that's something I'd like to do in future and hopefully watch with Isabella because Isabella will probably be able to watch a cartoon. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I plan to get it.
Yes, you can. Not necessarily take any notice of it, but you can certainly make a suggestion.
Well, yeah, I certainly have noticed you don't take much notice of my suggestion. That's why it looks like Robert.
Don't tell me Big Finish. Go on.
No, actually, I wasn't going to suggest Big Finish this time. What I was going to suggest is, you might remember the Power of the Daleks reimagined fan film that came out last year, was released across the year in 3 episodes.
Oh, yes.
Nobody out there has reviewed it. It's on YouTube. We can all sit down and watch it without having to buy DVDs or anything like that. That could possibly be something we can review because it's only an hour long put together.
That's possible, yes. Yeah. Obviously, like I always say, the problem is finding time. Like I say, nearly didn't have time to do this episode this week because of trying to squeeze in a 5-episode Doctor Who story while I'm extremely busy, but just about managed it. But yes, certainly,
and this
maybe
week
later
we've got
on.
A 6-episode.
Later on in the year, I'd say that. God. Just remind me, Matthew, okay? Okay, like when it comes to it, we're thinking we're scratching our heads.
Just forget about it, like you do with all my.
No, I probably will, but it won't be deliberate. that's about it. No song this week. Well done, everyone. Keep it up. Until next week. Thank you for listening to the show. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Thanks for the fish.
So, thank you for the fish.
Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.